Well, here it is, Tuesday night again. December the 30th, 1980. Our last class this year. We have just finished up our studies in Haggai, Zechariah. I thought we'd turn to Haggai tonight, only two chapters in it, and it's at about the same time as the other prophecy and gives us a little different viewpoint of the goings on of the building of the temple and condition of Jerusalem at the time of the return from the Babylonian captivity. So let's turn to Haggai, page 1277. In the second year of Darius the king, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet unto Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Josedech, a high priest, saying. There we'll stop there, the first verse. How you find this is the same setting as far as kings is concerned, and so on as it was in Zechariah when we were in our studies on that in the last few weeks. And we had Zerubbabel mentioned, and we find that he was of the tribe of Judah, of the royal seed, and if they had been allowed to have a king at that time, no doubt he would have been the king of Israel. But Israel has not had any king since the Babylonian captivity. And Joshua, the son of Josedech, the high priest, also comes into the story in both of these. And here is the message. Verse 2. Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, this people say, the time is not come, the time the Lord's house should be built. The people say, that is Israel, the people, say the time is not come, the time the Lord's house should be built. They're putting it off. It's a little trait of human nature, you know, to put things off. Some of us ought to have for our last name, Putinov. Sounds a little Russian, doesn't it? Well, anyhow, it's one of those things. I guess we hate to face the issues. We hate to start the work. And all of the responsibility and the planning and so on it takes. So Israel's come back and they've rebuilt the walls of the city and they've built them houses and so on, but they haven't started on the temple. And that was a part of the bargain when they came back. They were to rebuild the city and rebuild the temple. And so this is what the people say. Well, the time has not come. The time that the Lord's house should be built. Well, then came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet saying, it is time for you, O ye, to dwell in... Is it time? I got it wrong. Here's the question. Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell on your sealed houses and this house lie waste? I hear they've got their houses all fixed up nice and paneled on the inside. They're really living pretty nice. They've got their houses all done, and still the house of the Lord is just a jumble of stones and so on. And so the Lord asks, is it time for you, O ye, to dwell on your sealed houses, and this house it fly waste? Now therefore saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. In view of the fact that you're living in your houses, and them all fixed up and so on, now just consider your ways. What's been happening? Ye have sown much and bring in little. Well, what's happened? They go out in their fields and they sow and they're not reaping anything. What has happened to them? Ye eat, but ye have not enough. There's not enough food to go around. Ye drink, but you're not filled with drink. Well, what kind of drink it is, I don't know. Ye clothe you, but there is none warm. Maybe there isn't enough heavy clothing to go around. And Jerusalem gets pretty cold in wintertime. And he that earneth wages to put into a bag with holes. inflation is right. No doubt that's just about the problem. And so what he earns goes so fast as if he put it in a bag that had holes in it. And we know something about that in these days, don't we? But saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Now there can be much more application to that, and we have heard that done, and so on, in spiritual matters. In our spiritual life, the Lord would say, consider your ways. Give so much, bring in little. A lot of activity going on, and there is a lot of religious activity going on in the country today, everywhere you go. Radio programs, printed matter, magazines, and religious bookstores, and so on, all over. Give so much, but bring in little. People are poverty-stricken spiritually. You eat, but you have not enough. Spiritually, they eat a lot of chaff. A lot of stuff is put out under the name of religious literature. Worse than useless, a lot of it. Like a lot of the breakfast foods we have now, they say that some of these breakfast foods are prepared in cardboard boxes. It'd be better if you'd eat the cardboard box and throw the cereal away. Well, that's about the way some of the religious stuff is. A friend of mine has been dead a few years, a pastor, used to have charge of a bookstore, and he said it was terrible, and the stuff that the preachers came in and bought, the junk. They didn't buy Bibles and study books on the Bible and so on. He said I might as well bought the funny books for all the good to do them. But that was the kind of stuff they were living on. They eat. They were eating all of that, but they didn't have enough. Spiritually starved. And you drink, but you're not filled with drink. You drink at the fountain of the truth. They're drinking everywhere else but that. No wonder that they don't get anything. Maybe they, maybe what they're drinking is filled with too many poisons and so on too. Wouldn't know about that, what they did back in those days. Ye clothe ye, but there's none warm. Ah, you can put on a cloak of righteousness, but you know, it always has a lot of moth holes in it. You can't keep warm and that sort of a thing. And he that earneth wages to put into a bag of holes. Well, when one is spending all of his money and more too for self-gratification, to keep up with the Joneses, all that sort of thing, well, that's what it would seem like. Lots and lots of people are spending more than they're earning. And then wondering what they're going to do. So we can put some modern application on that. And I could carry that earnest wages a little bit further, possibly. There are many who are in Christian work. And whether they get paid for it or not, whatever they get out of that work, which is their own planning, which is an organization, a part of Christendom, whatever you get out of it, it's just like putting in a bag with holes. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. And that is a good motto today, consider your ways. Then he further orders them. He says, go up to the mountain and bring wood and build a house. And I will take pleasure in it and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. So now that's quite a job to go up into the mountain and bring wood down and build a house for the Lord. As for themselves, of course, that's a different thing. But this is to build a house for the Lord. Now, let's keep in mind all the time here of whom we are speaking. God's first people, Israel. and that they had a special mission on this earth, and that's the reason why they were to have a temple and to have a place for God to dwell among them and so on, because he had chosen them, they were his children, and they had a special commission for being a blessing to the nation sometime whenever they could get their own sins overcome. Of course, they couldn't be a blessing to the nations while they were practicing idolatry and breaking all of the Ten Commandments. And so we have these long years of ups and downs for Israel, starting in about 1491 B.C. when they left Egypt in Exodus. And here this book, Haggai, is dated about 410 B.C. That's 1,000 years almost in between, with all these ups and downs. First they're on sitting on a cloud, and then they're down in the Valley of Depression. They go after the gods of the heathen, and of all the things that they could do. And yet they were God's people, and he was patient with them, and he did everything he could to straighten them out and get them going the right way. And so among the heathen, if they would build a temple, a nice temple unto the Lord, and he would be with them and work with them and give them good crops and all of that sort of thing, it would glorify the Lord of Israel, because the heathen would see that Israel had a God who could do things, or their gods couldn't. And ye looked for much, and lo, it came to little. I was just talking to somebody today about this very thing. There's a tendency on our part to count our chickens before they're hatched. And so here, you look for much. They plant a crop. They put a tend to their grapes and so on. And it says, lo, it came too little. Like a farmer buying an expensive automobile with the hopes of having a good crop. Then what happens when the crop fails? You can't pay for it. And when you brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why? Saith the Lord of hosts. Why, because of mine house that is waste. That's the reason why that our crops are failing and everything going wrong and so on, is because his house is lying waste. They've tried to do everything for themselves and leave the Lord out of it. And ye run every man into his own house. Well, yes, they got their own house and they're very proud of that and so on, but the Lord doesn't have a house that he could dwell among his people. Now, we know very well he could. But remember that this people is to be a special object lesson to the nations. And God had his plan for how that was to be done. And they're not going along with the plan. Therefore, the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit. Now, you might wonder about that word dew. Maybe here sometime in the past years I have mentioned something was discovered in Palestine. Late years, there were terraces around on some of the hills, and they found little round piles of stones, a hollow pile of stones. It was hollow in the inside and up a foot or two high, with flat stones laid up, and air spaces between them all around, laid up loosely, and it looked as if on the inside of that, in the center of it, in the ground, that there might have sometime been a grapevine. Just that much of a depression and so on, that when the fellows were looking them over, why, they came to that conclusion. And still, they didn't quite tumble to what had happened until finally some bright fellow spoke up and said, well, I see now. They had planted grapes on these terraces, these steps along the sides of the hills, and then put these stones around them, and during the night, the dew would gather on those stones, and they have heavy dew over there, and it would trickle down and give enough water from night to night to keep the grapes growing. That was your irrigation system. So now when you see these words here, therefore the heaven over you is stayed from dew, why, that meant the loss of a crop. And the result, and the earth is stayed from her fruit. No dew, no fruit. I have lived where the dew was so heavy that be up in the morning and be dripping off of the roof like it had been raining. That's only about 175 miles from here, something like that, near the lake. And now you take a plant, for instance, like corn, with those leaves, or blades as we call them, sticking up and curves a little bit down toward the stem. When it rains or heavy dew, it trickles down that and down the stem and down to the root, the ground. That can pick up a lot of extra water that way just because of the particular shape of the leaves. A lot of plants are, of course, made that way to survive where they grow. Then I call for a drought upon the land, and upon the mountains, and upon the corn, and upon the new wine, and upon the oil, and upon that which the ground bringeth forth, and upon man, and upon cattle, and upon all the labor of the hands. God says he did that, and did it on purpose, to wake them up. You know, as long as man is prosperous, he doesn't need God. I know there's a verse in the Old Testament that says that God hath made man upright, but he, that is man, has sought out many inventions. And so when he gets a lot of inventions and he doesn't have to work too much with his hands and so on, why, he's self-sufficient, he doesn't need God. And of course, that is what man is trying to do. He wants to be God himself. And he has worked out some terrible things along that line. It was just one mind came to me about the great thunderbolts that God used to make up in Greece. The mythologies that they have there. Well, man is making things like that to destroy mankind on the earth. And so he does all these things. A drought. And it's upon the land, the mountains, the corn, the wine, the oil, whatever the ground brings forth, upon men, upon cattle, they don't multiply, if they should, and upon all the labor of the hands. Put it in the bag with holes in it. That's what it amounts to. Well, this is a pretty serious indictment against Israel, what the Lord has said here. That'll wake somebody up. And I don't suppose that Haggai was very slow about publishing it abroad. These prophets were a pretty fearless bunch of people, you know, very bold. That's the reason some, and many of them, were persecuted, killed, and so on. Because people didn't like that kind of news. Now here, just think of somebody coming in our society today and give us a little sermon like this and tell us that the reason why we're having our troubles and so on we have is because we haven't done something for the Lord. People wouldn't like that, would they? Now we'll see how it works here. I'll repeat that verse 13. Then spake Haggai, the Lord's messenger, and the Lord's message unto the people, saying, I am with you, saith the Lord. In spite of all their shortcomings, their failure to build him a house and so on, I am with you, saith the Lord. And the Lord stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, the son of Josedech, the high priest, and upon the spirit of all the remnant of the people. And they came and did work in the house of the Lord of hosts, their God. In the 24th day of the 6th month, in the 6th year of Darius the king. They started to work right away. Well, it was certainly nice that they heeded their prophet and the message which the Lord sent by his prophet. Chapter 2. In the 7th month, well, let's see, we started out in what month? 6th month. Now the 7th month, in the 21st day of the month, came the word of the Lord to the prophet Haggai, saying, speak now to Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Josedech, the high priest, and to the residue of the people, saying, who is left among you that saw this house in her first glory? Over 70 years ago, it had been destroyed. I wonder how many people were left that had seen Solomon's temple in all its glory. Now, we know this one didn't equal Solomon's temple at all, because we do find in the prophets that when they did get it built and the people saw it and so on, there were some who remembered the glory of Solomon's temple. And they wept. So, well, they didn't have as much to work with. And so, they had to use what they had. Yet now be strong, O Zerubbabel, saith the Lord. And be strong, O Joshua, son of Josedech, the high priest. Be strong, all ye people of the land, saith the Lord, and work. For I am with you, saith the Lord of hosts. Now that should be a lot of comfort. He said he's with them. According to the word that I covenanted with you when you came out of Egypt, so my spirit remaineth among you, fear ye not. Here he had made a covenant with them 1,000 years before. And he still remembered it. Now, I'll just make a little bit of comparison here. Many generations have passed since they came out of Egypt. And this is pretty close to 1,000 years, but remember that long before this, we had one man that lived almost that long. Methuselah. Time is pretty hard to mark off and estimate and so on and that, isn't it? Sort of a slippery thing to get away from you, time. I don't know, it goes fast sometimes, or sometimes it goes slow. Time is a funny thing, that. And yet, we wonder about it, you know. Now, verse 6, for thus saith the Lord of hosts, yet once is a little while, and I will shake the heavens and the earth and the sea and the dry land. And I will shake all nations, and the desire of all nations shall come. And I will fill this house with glory, says the Lord of hosts. Possibilities in the future. Wonderful possibilities that these people would only do their part. I remember when we were studying Zechariah, I reminded you that after all of that great revival they had and they got the temple built and so on, it lasted about 30 years, and they were back in their old ways again. That's about as long as it lasted. And there weren't any more such revivals until the Lord came over that period of almost 400 years. Now, the desire of nations shall come. future. But he will shake all nations first. Disturb them. Stir them up. Until they will come to the place that they will desire something, somebody who can fix things up. My, if we could just get a dictator in this world today to straighten out all the fuss and the musses going on, and the quarrels and so forth, and bring peace, why, wouldn't it be wonderful? Well, that's the desire of nations. And he's coming someday. For the earth's people. Now, it doesn't say here when he's coming. You have to go to Daniel for that. And whether Haggai and Zechariah had read Daniel and knew what he had to say about it, I don't know. You see, he came before these several years. See, Daniel wrote his book just about halfway down in that big image that is pictured in the second chapter of Daniel. In fact, he was in Babylon, which was the first one, and through Medo-Persia, probably until time for Greece to take over. So we would say that he prophesied practically during the first half of that image, as far as the image itself was concerned. Now, not half the years, because the years for that image, the times of the Gentiles, was 581 years. But the Babylonian Empire wasn't so long. Medo-Persia was a little longer, Greece a little longer, and Rome still more, the longest of any of them. And so we have that in mind, to keep in mind at least, when we're studying these prophecies and what's going on, as to where we are in these. Now you see, this is still in the Second Kingdom. Medo-Persian Kingdom. Darius is on the throne. Greece hasn't taken over yet. And Rome is still in the future. That helps us to place ourselves as far as history and so on is concerned to when these things are happening. So the desire of all nations shall come. And he says, I will fill this house with glory. Well, it hasn't come yet. And that house is gone. And Herod the Great built another one, a magnificent one, and it is gone. Destroyed in AD 70. And a desire of the nations. Yes, he came and went. He wasn't able to do what the nations wanted. And why? Well, they came into his own received him not. He was to work through them. They were to be a blessing to the nations. They refused. They wouldn't have him to be king over them. They crucified him. And so they missed their chance of being a blessing to the nations and with him to rule over the nations of the earth. Well, he's coming again, and this time, why, it's going to work. Because these people, the people who pierced him, Israel, are going to have enough trouble that they will finally turn to the Lord and say, blessed is he that comes in the name of the Lord. And then he will take over. Then he says in verse 8, the silver is mine, and the gold is mine, saith the Lord of hosts. Well, that's true. He's just lent these things to us to use, but they're his. For he is the owner of the earth and all the things that are therein. And he says the glory of this house, this latter house, shall be greater than of the former, saith the Lord of hosts. And in this place I will give peace, saith the Lord of hosts. And that was true for a few years. It was wonderful for a period of about 30 years, but it fizzled out. Verse 10. In the 24th day of the 9th month, That'd be 3 months later then. The second year. Now let's get these years right. Be sure that I'm right here. That's still a second year, so it's about 3 months. Well, in the 24th day of the 9th month, in the second year of Darius, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, saying, another message for Israel. Thus saith the Lord of hosts. What do you mean by Lord of hosts? When the Lord came to this earth, he fulfilled his mission and he left. How did he leave? All alone? A great host of angels. And two of them stayed back and talked to the disciples. When he comes again, he will come in the same way. With a great host of angels. Innumerable. Spoken of many times. Of angels, of clouds, hosts, so on. Different names, but all the same thing. He's the Lord of hosts. Now, we don't know what that host includes, really. We know that there's an innumerable company of angels in connection with the New Jerusalem. That comes in the New Earth. And the Lord one time said that he could have many, many angels come and assist him, if necessary, when he was here on the Earth. He could have protected himself. Why, he had the power when Satan was tempting in the wilderness. He had the power to have Michael, the archangel, come and toss him out of the universe. He could have done it. But that wasn't his plan. There was a plan of redemption to work out. And Satan has to run his course, even as the wicked people, the Amorites, in the land had to run their course when Israel went in. And this is all for one end, and that is that God can be just, and at the same time the justifier of the ungodly. If he did some of these things, which he has the power to do, there might be some question in the mind of some of the greater beings at least, if not in some men's minds, as to whether God is really just or not. But when we consider all of his ways, and his plan and purpose as revealed to us, we can't find a flaw. And Satan can't either, and he's trying his best to do it. Well, thus saith the Lord of hosts, ask now the priest concerning the law, saying, if one bear holy flesh in the skirt of his garment, and with his skirt do touch the bread, or pottage, or wine, or oil, or any meat, shall he be holy? And if it just touches something, will it make it holy if that thing it touches holy? And the priest answered and said, no. Oh my, then the priest didn't touch a little piece of bread and bless it, and then it was holy, did they? Or powwow over a little water and it became holy water. You don't find anything like that in your Bible, do you? That's strange. Wonder where all that came from. You study history and some of the heathen religions and so on, you'll find out where it came from, but not from the Bible. Well, then said Haggai, if one is unclean by a dead body, that is, if he's touched a dead body or soul, dead soul, if he touched any of these, shall it be unclean? And the priest answered and said, it shall be unclean. And that was the law. Then answered Haggai and said, so is this people. And so is this nation before me, saith the Lord. And so in every work of their hands, and that which they offer, there is unclean. That doesn't sound very good, does it? And now I pray you, consider. That word consider happens a few times in this book, doesn't it? And now I pray you, consider from this day and upward, from before a stone was laid upon a stone in the temple of the Lord. Since those days were, when one came to an heap of 20 measures, there were but 10. One came to the press fat for to draw out 50 vessels out of the press, there were but 20. I smote you with blasting, and with mildew, and with hail, and all the labors of your hand. Yet ye turn not to me, saith the Lord. For all that trouble's upon them, so they wouldn't cry to the Lord for help or turn to him. Consider now, from this day, that word consider again, consider now from this day and upward, from the 24th day of the 9th month, even from the day that the foundation of the Lord's temple was laid, consider it. Now there is the date of the laying of the foundation. Is the seed yet in the barn? Yea, as yet the vine, and the fig tree, and the pomegranate, and the olive tree, that's not brought forth. From this day I will bless you. Yes, the seed was still in the barn, it wasn't planted yet. But he says now, I'll bless you. Starting to build a temple would do the work. Again, the word of the Lord came unto Haggai in the 24th day of the month, saying, speak to Zerubbabel, governor of Judah, saying, I will shake the heavens and the earth. I just wonder what kind of a shaking that would be, anyhow. You know, when you read the Revelation about the day of the Lord and so on, there's great earthquakes and lots of damage and destruction and people killed and so on. It says, I will shake the heavens and the earth, and I will overthrow the thrones of kingdoms, the throne of kingdoms, and I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the heathen. I will overthrow the chariots and those that ride in them, and the horses and their riders shall come down, every one by the sword of his brother. That day is yet to come. There have been little demonstrations of it, but not like it's going to be someday. In that day, saith the Lord of hosts, will I take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, saith the Lord, and will make thee as a signet, for I have chosen thee, saith the Lord of hosts. Well, you know, it's disappointing in a way. You read these prophecies, what the Lord could and would do for the people, and he doesn't do it because they don't do their part. Of course, now there are some of these that are absolutely true and will be finally fulfilled. I think I have one, and I have a little bit of time here. Let's turn back to the 60th chapter of Isaiah. Now, to get the setting of it, we'll have to read a little bit in the chapter before. Oh, let's see. Start with verse 18 in chapter 59 of Isaiah. According to their deeds, accordingly he will repay fury to his adversaries, recompense to his enemies. To the islands he will repay recompense. So shall they fear the name of the Lord from the west, and his glory from the rising of the sun, that's the east. When the enemy shall come in like a flood, the Spirit of the Lord shall lift up a standard against him, the enemy. And notice this, verse 20 is quoted in the New Testament. And the Redeemer shall come to Zion. Now this is the second coming of Christ. And unto them that turn from transgression to Jacob, saith the Lord. As for me, this is my covenant with them, saith the Lord. My Spirit that is upon them, and my words which I have put in thy mouth, shall not depart out of thy mouth, nor out of the mouth of thy seed, nor out of the mouth of thy seed's seed, saith the Lord, from henceforth and forever. And then, notice chapter 60. Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth. That is, out in the heathen lands and so on. But this light comes upon Israel. Now don't try to make this light coming to the whole world here at this. This is the Lord's coming. It will spread to the nations in due time. But he's speaking here. And grow starting upon the people, and this is the peoples of the earth. But the Lord shall arise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee. Now this is the coming of the Lord, the beginning of the millennium. And so when you read in Matthew concerning the servants that hid their talent or their pound, and they were cast into outer darkness, the weeping, the gnashing of teeth, you have the picture right here. Because when the Lord comes, there's going to be great darkness among the nations. He's coming to his people Israel. And any Israelite that is judged at that time when the Lord comes, if he has failed, if he's not an overcomer, he can't have part in the inheritance, he'll be banished out among these nations into this darkness. So he'll be cast into outer darkness. And have to stay there during the millennium and have no part in the inheritance. You see how scriptures can explain the scriptures. And finally, after this happens, and he comes, and the Jews begin to evangelize the earth, and the Gentiles shall come to thy light, and kings to the brightness of thy rising. Because when he comes to Israel, he sets up his millennial kingdom, it's going to be the wonder of the world at that time. It's going to be a glorious thing. Lift up thine eyes round about, and see, all they that gather themselves together, they come to thee. Thy sons shall come from far, and thy daughters shall be nursed at thy side. Then thou shalt see, and flow together, and thine heart shall fear, and be enlarged, because the abundance of the sea shall be converted unto thee. The forces of the Gentiles shall come unto thee. The multitude of camels shall cover thee, the dromedaries of Midian, Ephah. All they shall, from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and incense, and they shall show forth the praises of the Lord. The flocks of Kedar shall be gathered together unto thee, and rams of Nebaioth shall minister unto thee, and they shall come up with acceptance on thine altar, and I will glorify the house of my glory. Speaking again, you see, of a temple he will have at that time, the millennial temple. Now Ezekiel gives you quite a description of that temple. What it's going to be like. It'll be far greater than anything of Solomon or Zerubbabel or Herod ever built or thought of. Be a wonderful temple. So this gives you a little picture of some of the things for Israel, God's people. And I know a lot of people will say, when they don't know what the plans are and so on, they'll say, well, why is he doing all this for that people and not for the nations of the earth? Now you go into Romans, the first chapter, and you'll find out why the nations of the earth don't get all of this. They had almost a 2,000-year period that they knew God did not want to retain him in their knowledge. And they turned to idols and so on, worshipped even creeping things, and so God gave them up. And at the time he gave them up, he chose Abram out of Ur of the Chaldees to be the head of a nation who would be a priestly nation to the rest of the nations. Now that is a little history of it and how things are working out. I know that a lot of people are not exactly acquainted with God's plan and purpose for the earth. But it doesn't take too long to see what it is and how it's going to be worked out. Now, I think I started about a minute early there, and maybe I'd better cut this off before the machine goes bang.